You're listening to the Group Answers Podcast, a weekly show designed to resource, train, and encourage small group leaders. Each episode considers current trends and resources, as well as timeless truths and methods of discipleship. It's hosted by Brian Daniel. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to the Group Answers Show, co-host Haley Malone. And Haley, I don't know about you, but I could listen to that kickoff, that entree music all day long. And maybe I will someday.
It gets me hype. It's my walkout song would definitely be that.
Walkout song? Walkout
yeah.
song?
Walk like when you walk song. Out.
Oh, the walk plate. Up, walk out. Okay, yeah. We did that at One Lifeway one time, where every guest had their walk-up music. And I always thought, what would mine be? There's so many options. Would I go, well, there's a lot of options.
Yeah.
Have you thought about what your walk-up, would it be the Group Answers lead-in music? Would it be?
I mean, that's a top contender. A lot of people obviously know the song and would really just to it. I don't know. Gosh. Like probably pump the jam, pump it up. That would be mine. Because I'd be like wow. pumping everybody up.
Right. I wish everyone had the visuals right now to see you act out each measure of that song. All right, we have today one of my favorite people and a good friend with us. Haley, why don't you tee us up here?
I would love to. We are so excited for today's guest. So, hailing from Santa Cruz, California, Jared Ostelier received his call to ministry at the age of 8. When Lonnie Frisbee was praying over him during a church service. His ministry path, however, would take him to some unexpected places, doesn't it always? From time with the Navy and the Marine Corps as a chaplain's assistant, a police and fire chaplain, a church planner, a sending church pastor, a revitalization pastor, and even, get this, folks, the vice president and founding father of a motorcycle club.
And that's important.
That's important for all of mm-hmm. you out there.
Yep.
Gives him some street cred. So Jared's experience has been formative as it has been varied. He is currently serving in Burbank, California at Story City Church. Jared and his wife, Monique, a licensed marriage and family therapist, have been married for 28 years. We can clap for that. That's amazing. And they have two children, Callie and Champs.
Everybody give it up for Jared. Jared, it's been a long time. We've been Ooh. Talking about this for... quite some time, and here we are. We are recording on the show. So thanks for being with us today. And near 2 hour time difference out there on the left coast.
Yeah, the best coast. Let's get that right.
Hey, no pushback from me on that one. All right. So it's real important, and we'll maybe get to it if not on this show on this recording, this episode, and then a future one. That motorcycle club reference. But just look at that bio, just how many different things Jared has done. So that's also really important. So Jared and I have known each other for, I guess, 2 or 3 years now. And we actually have a book project that we've been working on about that same amount of time that's gone through several iterations. So I just want to start here because we've logged some hours together. So Jared, you and I have both read, it's an old book, late in the 90s. By George Hunter, and the title of the book is The Celtic. I want everything in me wants to say Celtic because I think that's how the C is supposed to be pronounced, but the Celtic Way of Evangelism. And really, this book takes apart St. Patrick's approach to evangelism, right? But there's this notion of belonging before believing that emerges from that, that's right. I think a center cut of some of the conclusions that you're coming to. So in this book, guys, I just want everybody just to lay the groundwork here. What this author does, George Hunter, he was at Asbury, right, Jared, at the time. And he's probably not still with us, but he describes what is a monastic community. And the whole premise here is that it's a more effective approach to conversion to accept people in your community and let them work out their faith in community than to hold them at arm's length until they agree to a certain set of premises or circumstances or doctrines before you let them in. That would be his concept of missional community. So, Jared, let's just start there. How have you taken this thinking and acted it out and there in Burbank, which is, I don't know how many of you listening out there have been to Burbank. It is, it's basically Studio City, right, Jared? I mean, it's the industry. It's the Hollywood movie making industry.
Yeah, I think the Burbank would resent being compared to Studio City only because that's an actual town next to
an
us.
An actual place, right? Yep.
Yeah.
I get it.
But we do. I mean, within a couple blocks, we've got Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, Warner Brothers, Disney, ABC, NBC, Burbank Studios of The Tonight Show are, you know, essentially all of that. You know, people all the time are like, hey, I just saw Jay Leno driving by in the car, or, you know, we've got all kinds of people, and 85% of my church is in the industry in some way. So it's definitely, you know, people say LA, most people in LA aren't actually in LA. They're actually in the Valley, and Burbank is sort of that connecting piece between LA proper and the Valley. It's just because of the industry, not because of its location. So, yeah.
So I'm going to use the term stage to table. Talk about that dynamic. What does that mean? And what's the practical application there at Studio City as you have worked this out in your approach to discipleship and disciple making and really community?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the question I would have, Brian, is we can get to the practical, but do we want to get to the why behind it first, or is it more helpful to get to the practical and then go to the why?
Yeah. Let's work out the why.
Okay. So I think that's a great place to start for me. And I understand some people want to know the meat and then where we got there. For me, this really started a number of years ago, probably 10, 15 years ago, and I got to meet a couple of pastors from Europe. One is the Baptist Bishop of Latvia, which is a super fun title, super fun guy. His name is Kasper Starnes. And the other is a pastor named Irvin Middleman, and Irvin is pastoring in Slovakia right now. I just got to spend a couple of days with Irvin, a little bit of time with Irvin this last week. And the questions that I had for them is, hey, you guys are obviously ahead of where the U.S. is, not in a good way, but ahead of where the U.S. is as far as people's interaction with Christianity, people's interaction with religion. And so I just peppered them for the last 10 years of, what are you experiencing? What is this like for you? And, you know, it's slightly different. They don't have American Catholicism. And so they have real, the Catholicism that they deal with, which is the only real Christian representation in their country, is really heavily mixed with pagan ideals. So idols on the mantle place and some of the other things. And so the Catholics in the city consider Protestants to be a cult. They don't recognize Vatican II. And so, you know, they're facing a challenge from the supposed only real Christian kind of experience that people have. He was telling me that in a city of 250,000, this is Irvin, that they're less than 0.02% Christian in the entire country. And that most people are so afraid of it because they'll get excommunicated if they're Catholic, or they're just told it's such a weird deal that people should stay away from it. Families will stop talking to you if you become a Protestant Christian. The other thing they're facing is it's so difficult to get any good teaching that a lot of their people are learning from YouTube. And so they don't have good theology when they do have theology. And he's sort of struggling with all this stuff. And so I'm like, how are you finding a way to present accurate and true Christianity in the midst of this area that is so against it, for lack of better words? And to sum everything up that he said is it came down to community. He said, you know, people are isolated. They're lonely. He said, there's so many mixed beliefs and ideals and people. And so ultimately, this has really come from a place of that people are desperately looking to belong to something. And so that's what started me on this whole thinking path. And like, how do we create You know, I think that fits with Genesis chapter 1. I think it fits with what we're called to do. And so it made total sense to me that that's what was working. And so really out of that, I just went on a quest for information of what is working in the community. And you, I love it. You used the line from John Mark Comer, and he said, you know, we want to move the emphasis from the stage to the table. Dahati Lewis had a really interesting take. He's in Atlanta. And Dahati, this was about a different topic, but Dahati was talking about racial reconciliation. And Dahati said, you'll never change your church if you don't change your dinner table. And the idea is, I've heard somebody else say, if you want to see racial reconciliation, you have to have it at your Super Bowl party before you have it in your church. And I think it's that same concept of where do we invite people into? How do we do that in a way that, you know, they don't need to perform. They don't need to become something. They simply are invited as they are. And so when you introduced me to the book, and I'll say Celtic Way of Evangelism because it's not the basketball team, it really put words to things that I had been wrestling with for a long time. And so I really appreciated sort of the framework around that discussion. He hits it in monastic communities, but ultimately that's his deal, is that we need to create spaces for people to belong before they believe.
I love that. We actually, I've been in this role at First Orlando for about 2.5 years now. And when I came on, I was like, we need some language that can help unify a legacy church with this next generation that's moving in, because we have to meet everyone's needs. And we took on the phrasing of belong, believe, become. And so that's what we focus on. And the entry level class that we have for people is called belong, because it's so enticing. Somebody sees the word belong and they're like, well, I want to do that. I want to belong. They might not know a lick of Jesus or his life or the Bible, but they can step into a class because they're like, I'm going to belong. The name of the class told me so. So that's really cool. I love hearing some more details about that.
When Jaron and I first started talking about this, we weren't terribly deep in the conversation before it hit me that when you take a church like First Baptist Church Orlando, or let's just say any traditional church in the Deep South that's not dealing or having to navigate the same circumstances that something like somebody like Jared in Story City is, to what extent is it true that the proper positioning of that is, well, not now? If we are moving to more of a post Christian worldview, I don't know if worldview is the right plug term there, but if we're moving to more of a post Christian circumstance or environment, what does that mean? That's why a lot of this conversation and what Jared brings to this, I think, has a particular resonance. And we've talked about just the north and south poles of the cultural dilemma. On the one hand, you've got pre-Christian, on the one on the post-Christian. Are those synonymous or interchangeable with deconstruction and paganism in some form or fashion? So that's something else that we've worked out. So I think the thesis here is, okay, what's happening at Story City? To what extent can that be applied more broadly now? But I think the broader question is, to what extent is that going to need to be more applied more broadly at some point in the future?
Yeah, that's fantastic. So I was just meeting with a bunch of church planters and having this exact discussion. And it was really interesting because the varied experiences of each of them, right? And the trying to get to some of these applications, I realized I had to redefine some things, but my argument was that Christians, we're really slow to change the way that we apply things. And so I think that as we move towards trying to be aware and then respond, that typically by the time we respond, the issues move past us. So to get to sort of the crux of this conversation, and I love that you brought up the pre-pagan, the deconstruction pieces. If you don't mind, I'll go into that for a second, because I think that will set the framework here for us. And so I'm gonna put my own kind of definitions on these things. And I think you're facing three cultures in particular. I think we each of our churches and ministry face a Christian culture, a post-Christian culture, and what I'm defining as pre-Christian pagan. And so the way that I've defined Christian culture is you have grown up with a heavy enough influence by Christianity that even if you don't believe it, you understand the basic tenets of it. You're going to understand that it's Job, not the book Job. You probably know that Jonah isn't just a veggie tale, that it's a person, right? So there's a sense of like, you have an idea of the characters and at least some framework. And so I would say that like in a small town, in a Christian culture, it would be, even if everybody knows you're not a Christian, they're going to expect if you're running for mayor that you say you're Christian, right? That would be a Christian culture. A post-Christian culture, and I don't think post-Christian culture is necessarily bad. I think it is where we find healthy ways to really relook at what we're doing. But post-Christian culture in and of itself is this idea of sort of rejecting those culture things that we've experienced for different reasons. So we see people in post-Christian culture rejecting, I don't like the way the church treats gay people. I don't like, the church has done nothing but whatever the typical things are. And so you get in a post-Christian culture, you get this sense of, maybe the best way to describe it is super devout grandparents, but parents who are more moralistic. And so the grandchildren are driving to church with their parents. Their parents are fighting like cats and dogs all the way in the car. The doors open at church and suddenly they got their smiley faces on. And the kids are like, I want nothing to do with that. That's not okay. And so I think your post-Christian is where a lot of we're finding culture is moving to. And I think that's the feeling a lot of churches are getting is, oh my gosh, we're getting into this post-Christian place. But there's another place, and that is this pre-Christian pagan. And to be honest, this is what I'm seeing more in Los Angeles. And I think in some of the bigger cities, you're beginning to see this more, especially areas like my friends who are pastoring in Boston and New York and San Francisco, and even maybe in places like Orlando. I haven't spent enough time there to speak to that. But the idea is that there's a lot of people here who have never met a Christian in their life. I get that constantly. Oh, I've never met a Christian before. They've grown up with either no Christian influence, partly because maybe they've come from another country, maybe they grew up in a totally different religion, or just have never encountered somebody that's publicly shared their faith. And so they only have a caricature of Jesus and a caricature of Christians in their minds. And why this is important is because the way that the church responds to each one really matters, right? So if I'm evangelizing in a Christian context, then really what I'm appealing to is almost like being a junior high pastor. It's like, stop it. You know better. And that's kind of how you evangelize. It's like, hey guys, like, come on, you know better than this. And yeah, okay, I do. To evangelize in a post-Christian context, no matter what you do, it's an argument. And so it could be really healthy. It can be like, I'm so sorry you experienced Jesus that way. That's not the Jesus of the Bible. Let me show you what it is. You're still arguing off of one thing and onto something else, right? In a pre-Christian pagan environment, here's the problem. If you go to evangelize in by telling people to stop it, they're like, who are you? Why are you talking to me this way? If you go to argument, then it's like, why are you arguing? I believe that for you. That's great for you. I just am not there. And so pre-Christian pagan, the only real way to evangelize is build relationship first, allow people to belong before they believe. And that's why this is such an important thing in the way we do this.
Jared, thanks for sharing the insight on those three different contexts. And I want you to explain a little bit more for our listeners and for those of us that aren't quite in that pre-Christian pagan space yet, but I feel like here in Orlando, it's moving that direction. We're definitely in a post-Christian environment right now, but I could see it starting to trend that way. Would you talk to us a little bit more about why it matters that those of us who are sitting in the seats we're sitting in, whether we're a group's director, whether we're a group leader, how we can implement that table mentality now? Like, what are some practical steps we could take right now? Because we can't always rely on the stage. We've got to be intentional around our tables and at our Super Bowl parties and our upcoming events. So what does that look like for each of us today?
That's a great question. I think the question that goes with it is, how are people hearing us? How are they experiencing us, right? I think one of the things the church is actually doing better than before is I think we're in a better listening space. I think we're finding churches that are much more willing to listen. So I had a great interaction with a non-Christian person in the community a number of years ago. And they were complaining about churches that what churches do is often come in and say, here's how we're going to help. And this person was saying, that's not helpful to me. That's not what I actually need. But every church is offering to help in their own way. And none of it is what we're actually looking for. And so they were like, can you help? Here's what we need. And so I think churches are doing a better job of listening. I think practically, I think that's a good step is understanding our community in a way that that their needs drive our responses. And so I think that you practically move towards ways of, instead of saying, here's what the church offers, here's all of our programs, when you move the emphasis from the stage to the table, what you're saying is you're moving it into relational need in a way that is responding to conversations and things that happen from what people are telling you. This is what really is going on in our lives. You know, I try my best to spend a lot of time in conversations with non-Christians because how do I, if I don't understand what they're facing or what they're going through, how do I speak in a way that welcomes them in, right? If Sunday morning is the most important to us, if that's our front door, there is a lot of obstacles people have to overcome to get to that. But if our front door is the dinner table where we're building relationships with a lot of other people and even doing mission at that level, people are much more willing to engage in relationships and do things that are built because of the friendships they have. And then it moves them into a larger group. So I think the practical way is really making, moving the idea of mission, moving the idea of evangelism, moving the idea of discipleship away from Sunday mornings. And hear me, I'm not saying Sunday mornings are not important. I believe that I'm responsible to handle the word of God well and preach it well from the pulpit. I think that's one of the primary jobs of the pastors, but I think that that the apex part of this, the apostle, prophet, evangelism, shepherd, teacher, must be lived out in our groups in a real and practical way if we ever want to see the relevance of a Sunday morning.
Jared, what I hear there, though, is not a challenge to Sunday morning mentality at all, but rather instead of an either or, it's a both and. It's almost like taking down the walls of the church, whatever barriers there may exist in these cultures that you just, because even the Christian culture has some, there's some hangups there, I think, sometimes with the community. There can be, you got to be real careful here, but there could be a disconnect or a dissonance with the community at large. So what I hear is something commensurate to just, hey, let's look at what walls may be there that we didn't intend to build and see what we can do about bridging those gaps. All right, let me ask you this, because we've talked about this. Talk about non-Christian communities. If we're talking about community here and relationships, what's to be learned from non-Christian communities in this respect?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I think we have to start with the fact that God is a missionary God, right? There's an old saying that missionaries are people who overcome cultural differences, language differences, they have different meanings for different things. And so a missionary is willing to overcome all those different barriers to get to the people in order to have a relationship with them. But primarily what we're doing is asking non-Christians to become missionaries to us when the church is where we're just trying to get people to. And I think, practically we've done a poor job of helping our people understand that since God is a missionary God, we have to be a missionary people, which means that we can't sit and I hear all these, we've said this a long time, like, oh, the church is a locker room and it's supposed to go out. I think we've missed, we separate too much in that church is one space and our lives are the other space. It should be so commingled. It should be messy. And I think we should pray for more messy church, to be really honest. But to that sense, I think we have to be willing to go, how do I overcome? The question that should be driving us is, if God is a missionary God and we're missionary people, what do I need to do to overcome those boundaries? And here's the problem that we face. The problem we face is that the church doesn't know how to distinguish well between what is scripturally church and what is culturally church. Does that make sense?
Say more on that. No, say more on that. I think our people want to hear more about what you just said.
Okay. So don't do everything I do. Okay. I'm the guy who loves pushing boundaries, to push boundaries, but I'm trying to find a way constantly of how do I meet people where they truly are. Okay. So I'm not advocating for this in your context. I'm just telling you the ways that I'm listening to my community and trying to find ways to go, okay, how do I meet them there? So for instance, and this will probably freak some people out, but, we noticed that there was a resurgence in our area of Dungeons and Dragons, right? I grew up, that's the devil's game, and you're going straight to hell if you even talk about it, all that stuff. But I found a lot of our people who are coming to faith had been playing for years, and they had these friend groups that hadn't come to faith yet and wouldn't step place in the church. And so in Dungeons and Dragons, you sort of have to make up your own gods. And so my guys were making up Yahweh, and they were calling him Yahweh, and they were doing all this cool stuff. And the people were like, that sounds like a really cool God. And they're like, by the way, it's real. And they were like, that's crazy. And it started this stupid thing where they're like, hey, the movie had just come out and all these people are doing stuff. They're like, Pastor, I know we probably never do this, but could we host a Dungeons and Dragons game at the church so that people could come to the church and even step foot in a church and have some sort of positive interaction with Christians and with church that might build some trust up, right? With most people that are non-Christians, we're starting at a negative 50. And if you have a positive experience, you're not going to zero, you're going to negative 40. And so it takes time to build that trust and that relationship. And they're like, hey, this might be a great way to do that. So we did. We hosted a giant Dungeons and Dragons game. It was God honoring. We didn't preach. We weren't trying to convert people. We simply wanted to, the primary outcome was to build healthy relationships with people. And the number of people are like, I didn't even know a church would even care about people like me. See, that's the great part about this. They didn't get, oh, cool, the church likes Dungeons and Dragons. They said, wow, the church might actually care about somebody like me. So we have to find more ways that I think Jesus would have shocked us with some of the things he'd be willing to be involved in and present at. And I think there's probably more things that are cultural preferences that we say no to instead of scriptural preferences. And I think God is probably a little bit more free. I don't know. There's a whole movie about it called Footloose in the '80s about how we build these boundaries farther, right? Farther than they are. And frankly, I think that's what Jesus blasts the Pharisees for. He says, you put rules on these people that you can't even live up to. How are they going to live up to it? And the Pharisees' whole ideal was like, well, that's because we don't want them to get over to this place. So we've created these boundaries here. And I think, you know, without watering down the gospel, without compromising scripture, I think those things are our highest ideals. You know, scripture has to define everything, but I think there's some things that we hold as doctrine that are really cultural preferences.
It's almost like if disciple making environments, and we've talked about this before, instead of them being some kind of linear or compartmentalized areas, they're concentric circles. I think then the question becomes, how far out do you build those concentric circles? Because what you just described in your church with the D&D, that could be one of those outside boundaries of contact. That is one of the first touches of making disciples. Now, is that the most biblical thing that's going to happen? It's not. But is that a place that you can start finding common ground? And like you said, demonstrating I know you in your culture? Because if you're not demonstrating something along the lines of I know you, and if I don't, I want to know you, then how do you expect to move to the next environment or to get anyone on any kind of continuum?
Yeah, I think we're too content to be like, if people want us, they'll come to us. I was just talking to Irvin Middleman about this. He said that other pastors, there was three other churches in his city, said, why do you want to plant a church? We don't need another church. We have three churches. And he's like, again, 250,000 people in the city, three churches, like, it's not enough. And they're like, but our doors are open. Why would we need another one? Anybody that wants to come can come in. And he's like, guys, you're missing this. But see, American churches do the same thing. We're like, we're open. We've got a pithy slogan on our sign. You know, we've got a cool name and a cool logo. Why aren't people just coming to us? And so I think this really goes back to that statement of this is why the emphasis needs to move from the stage to the table. And it goes back to Matthew 28, as you're going, right? It's the sense of we're making disciples as we go about the lives God has already put us in. And I think if we can get out of this compartmentalized mentality of just get people to church and how do I in my everyday life, by the way I live my life, point to God and how he loves, how he leads, how he cares, showing the transparency of here's how I struggle, here's how I deal with pain. I think that's more real to people, and they see that and experience it. That's the start of discipleship. And then it moves into a more formalized relationship when there's trust built.
I think just to reiterate a point that Jared made earlier is there's some affirmation here that we are at a point where I think we're listening more and more sensitive and more attuned culturally than what we have been. I think we're asking different questions and questions that are more right or more appropriate on how to reach people. I think now it's just a matter of, Jared, I think that's real important to begin understanding. I don't know if it's biblical versus cultural or not. I don't know if that's the right diametric, but there is something cultural that I think we need to investigate, that we need to scrutinize, and maybe put that against the scriptural lens and remind ourselves of, so what are we trying to do? What is it that we're trying to do? Let's boil this down to the one thing we're trying to do, and let's build from there instead of kind of beginning with our cultural referendum.
Yeah, I think that if you think about it, right, like churches that try to be cool end up oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes abandoning scripture. And churches that are like so afraid of getting away from scripture, they abandon culture. And so there's something there where it doesn't have to be one or the other. It really can be both. As you see, Paul clearly uses, when he says, I become all things to all men, Paul uses, you know, in Greece, he's using their own culture as a pathway into it. That means he had to really be a student and understand their culture, right? I think that's a really important piece of this.
Well, Jared, thanks for being with us today. Right our mark. We had 10 questions today. I don't know if we got to any of them. And I thought this would be, it could be.
I know. I was like, I was trying to keep up. I was like, where are we? But we're going to have you back. We just have to have you come back, Jared. You've got so much insight.
I'm happy to come back, guys. It's been a good, I think this is a really important conversation.
Yeah, and I thought this would be a two-part. We talk about the different contexts a lot. We just had Rebbe Verghese on recently. He's in New York City, and we talked about that context. But I think because you're more astute, I don't know. But yes, to Haley's point, let's do that. Let's go ahead and get that in. Let's have a follow-up. There's several things we did not get to. So, Haley, thanks for being with us. Jared, again, have a great rest of the day. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule. That's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Group Answers Show. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for listening to the Group Answers podcast, hosted by Brian Daniel and produced by Lifeway Podcast. We would love for you to subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.